says his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around.
Io's house
in the middle of our street.
Io's house
in the middle of
Isle's House, episode 3. Ethan, Rocco, Jack, producer Greeny here with you once again to recap the first four Islanders games. It's a rough night in New York. Mets lost, Yankees lost, Islanders look mediocre. What's up, boys? How are we doing?
Just finished up watching that Islanders Blues game and kind of wish I might have done something else with my Thursday night.
Yeah, you put it perfectly. We need like a commercial that whoever sat through that entire game is entitled to compensation.
Agreed.
It was terrible. I don't know where we really want to begin. I don't think we have a rundown. It's late. I'm happy to just give my overall thoughts on the team so far through the first four games. I think they're perfectly mediocre. I see very, very little difference in roster composition from one year to the next. I think there are some things that are slightly better that are immediately negated by things that got a little bit worse. You know, Sorokin has looked awesome through his first two starts. And I think that's just negated by the fact that the defense is the exact same as it was last year. And they're getting very little help from the back end, especially on the offensive side of the puck. You know, on the offensive side, I think the first line has the potential to absolutely take over games and dominate, both from the score sheet and just possession generally. And then I think that that's going to be completely negated by the fact that the third line is useless. And they've gotten, I think, 0 total points from their fourth line through the first four games, which, again, you're not expecting a lot, but 0 offensive production is rough and you're going to need a little bit. You know, we could talk about some individual player performances, but I think overall beating up on a Colorado Avalanche team that at the time was winless, was starting a goaltender that was giving up like 5 goals a game. And, you know, using player performances from that game to justify your rah-rah attitude about the Islanders on the former Bird app, I think that's lame. I think that's, you know, you're not going to get far in your analysis throughout this season if you use those type of outlier performances to analyze this team. So that's where I stand. I'm really not thrilled. I think it's going to be a long season. I think this team is exactly where it was last year, where we're going to be hoping that they sneak in. And I certainly don't think they're good enough to beat the best of the best in a long season.
No, I agree with most, just about everything you said. It's just the little things that got better. You look at the defense, you look at whether it be Pelech, Pulak, whomever, it hasn't really been good enough. And it's tonight really upset me because it was one of those games. Had they have won, you look at it as, all right, successful trip, early season, there's going to be bumps in the road, get this win, move on. I believe you have Montreal on Saturday, which should be a very winnable game. But man, the way they played, the way they lost, it's just frustrating. And it's very early, but I do tend to agree with Ethan on just about all the points where it's just looks like a lot of the same. And the ceiling just doesn't feel high enough with this team. 4 games in, plenty of time, but I'm not loving what I'm seeing. But the one positive is Sorokin. I do think if he continues to look like this, he can carry them. These 2 games, honestly, I think is the best I've seen him look since 2 years ago. What did he come in, 2nd in the Vezina? He looks like that good to me. I'm really happy with his positioning. Jack had a good tweet about that late in the game. I forget who it was, maybe Shen, but someone on St. Louis took a shot from a tough angle and he just took it down, no problem.
Effortlessly.
That was something that was his weakness. Being out of position, rebound control. He seems to have cleaned a lot of that up. So as a whole, it feels negative, but I'm very happy with the positive in Sorokin because we're going to need him to carry us, and I think he can.
Yeah, Jack, before you go, I just need to say, like, the one narrative that if you just throw tonight's game out, because obviously they lost in overtime and it's a negative result, but, you know, people are talking about how through the first 3 games, like, oh man, like, you know, their only loss was to Dallas and they really didn't get outplayed that bad. Dude, they lost 3-0, and like Dallas is the standard. They are a Stanley Cup favorite. Like, they're one of the top teams projected to win the Stanley Cup. And if you're going to get dominated by a Stanley Cup favorite, you're not going to score a goal. You're going to, you know, try to find some moral victories here and there. you know, in my eyes, this is like a Carolina Hurricane scenario. Like, what are you going to take away from that that's possibly positive? Like, we're talking about a team that has a bunch of talent. They're not even that young anymore. You know, they're not old, but they're not, you know, 21, 22 years old. You know, like another wasted year of Barzal, like another wasted year of Ilya Sorokin. Brock Nelson's 32, Kyle Palmieri's 34. You know, Rocco, you and I would go back and forth this offseason talking about your concept of, well, we might be taking a gap year here before actually being able to compete because there are some contracts that need to be shed in order to improve the roster. There are some guys who are probably going to age out and get replaced with guys who are younger and a bit more talented and a bit more skilled. But like you need to be looking at this season as, I mean, I don't want to say Stanley Cup or bust, but at least like a deep playoff
Second
run or
round,
bust. You know,
second winner round,
at
at
least second
least.
round.
And the other side of it too, I think a lot of people, especially on Twitter, love to point out, oh, it's only 4 games, it's only 4 games. And it's true, but at the same time, it's the same cast, it's the same problem. So when someone says it's only 4 games, I say it's almost been like 4 years like this at this point.
You're gonna hate
It's
when I come to talk then.
no,
Oh,
but
God.
that's how I feel, just because it is early in the season and things can change and they have made additions, but I think a lot of the issues are long-standing issues. They're not like, oh, this year that last year this was a problem and we're going to correct that. It's aging, it's lack of speed, it's a number of things. And I think there are some positives to take away from it, but the overall outlook, I'd be lying if I said it didn't scare me a bit.
Let me ask you guys this. I actually couldn't watch the Dallas game. Not going to act like I did. How did Varlamov look in that game?
Better than the first game.
Yeah, he was fine.
He look good? Did he look like Varley though? Because the
They
first game
didn't
he didn't look.
they
He
didn't
didn't look.
lose because of him.
Right. And then Ottinger stood on his head on the other side as well.
One positive I can take away is Sorokin and Varlamov potentially clicking together at the right time. That's what we need from that tandem. But overall, I do disagree with you guys in some ways here. It's a little bit of a different cast. I mean, we have Duclair and Siplikov in the top six. We've seen moments where that top line can be dynamic. Tonight, there were so many opportunities in front of the net with the puck loose that someone just had to bang it in. To not come up with a goal in that game is shocking, but credit to St. Louis. And if we do pop one in and win that game 1-0, I feel like the whole tone of this pod might be a little bit different. So we go on the road, we go 1-1-1, we lose to Dallas, we take care of business in Colorado, and we lose a tough one to St. Louis. I don't think it's a complete failure. A few positives I want to point out. Not a completely different cast, but Mayfield returning from injury has looked pretty good. He still has those moments where, you know, he's going to turn the puck over, he's going to make a silly play, but overall, he's been pretty good. Duclair and Siplikov have been pretty good. And one thing I do want to point out, the fourth line I noticed the first few games I watched up until tonight, I swear they must have had a total of like 30 seconds in the offensive zone and they just get hemmed in every time. And yeah, it's easy to point the finger at Wahlstrom. I'm not saying the guy's been the most helpful, but before tonight, I would say McLean and Cizikas had been pretty invisible as well. So I don't want to just point it on one player. It's
I
just
think if you're
so.
going to point out that the fourth line's getting hemmed into their own zone, I would agree with you that that's not Wahlström's fault.
Yeah,
It's not his
Wahlström hasn't
fault,
been great. He hasn't
but
been great,
it's a
but
big factor.
he hasn't been great, but like if you watch the games and you pay real close attention, I'm telling you, like the first few games, Kyle McLean and Casey Cizikas were not impressive. The third line has just been eh. That was a strong suit for us last year in the playoffs, as we know. With Engvall down, want to touch on that real quick. I saw he has one goal in 3 games, no other points. And I know it's just 3 games, as we keep saying, but your career's on the line. You're in the minor leagues. Like, I want to see you tearing that shit up. Like, 1 point in three
Jack, he's
games.
just not that good.
Yeah. And
Like,
he's already paid. The money's in the bank, no
well, I
matter what.
mean, a lot of our fan base think that this guy is really good. So, guys, if he's really good, he better start tearing it up down there because right now he doesn't even deserve to be
Jack,
called up.
would it surprise you if I told you that our fan base is not the brightest?
No, really?
It wouldn't surprise me considering that I'm in it, but
Yeah, well.
But yeah, we can move on. But I'm not totally discouraged by the first few games here. I like to give it at least 10 before like formulating my strong opinions. But for now,
Jack, I think that's fine, dude. Like, I don't think like you don't need to be discouraged. But where do you see this team's ceiling?
As currently constructed, no additions.
Like, I'm sorry, but we're this far in, not to the season. I'm just talking to like this group of players. Like, can you confidently say that like I can see this group making a push for a Stanley Cup?
A Stanley Cup? I thought we were talking about 100 points here.
Well, most teams that get 100 points can compete for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
If you make the playoffs, you're a contender in the NHL. That's how I look at it.
The Islanders were not a contender the last 2 years.
I think there's like, so I agree with the NHL being a wide open playoff, but I think out of the 16 teams that typically make it, there's usually like 3, 4, 5 you look at and you think they have no chance.
Let me ask you this.
And let's be real, the Islanders were one of those last year. I mean, it was nice that they made it, but they were one of those most people would look at and say they're not winning the cup, and they didn't get past the first round. So it's not like you could prove it up to be untrue.
There's going to be a lot of change this year in the league because Florida lost a lot of their defense. Carolina lost a lot of players. Like, I just look at it like if you matched us up with anybody in the Eastern Conference in a playoff series, I would have some confidence and might be
anyone.
Yeah, but you're the
Florida Jack. Florida.
Florida lost a lot of players, man. We'll see how they look this season. They haven't looked great. Lost to Vancouver tonight, 3-2 in OT.
Jack, I have to step in. I'm sorry. Okay, I have to agree with the elders here because it's only 4 games. Yes, I'm more concerned. I think I'm on the same page with the elderly people here that the biggest problem
elderly.
Is,
no, dude, it's the elders.
The elders. Makes it sound 80. Elders were just older
all
than
right.
you.
Elders, elderly, whatever. The biggest problem is not their results. It's how they've looked. They look the exact same as they've always looked. And Jack, they can't beat anyone in this league. I mean, is the goal just to get to the playoffs as a second wild card and then win an overtime game in round one and then go home?
Why does it have to be the narrative? Why does it have to be get in and some upsets? Like,
why can't they build a winner? Yeah.
Do you guys not think that Siplikov and Duclair have looked great out there?
They're not getting any production from the third line. And to be honest, like, okay, Brock had a great game against Colorado. Everyone had a great game against Colorado. Like, I just don't expect that production to continue. I don't expect Palmieri at age 34 to put up 30 goals again. Like, anything that he brings, anything that Siplikov adds to that line, like, who's to say that just doesn't even out to the production lost from Brock and Palmieri year over year? Like, that's what I'm getting at. Like, I just don't see them building on something that was already great.
And Ethan, I think you and I have discussed this a while back, but it still rings true that it feels like they finally found some of the right top six pieces and their bottom six is just collapsing. They're getting older.
It's the same thing every year. It's like,
they had a top six guy that makes $3 million that they had to send to the minors. You know, it's that was like their bread and butter years ago with Trotz having such a deep team. Now they have a little bit better talent up top, but I feel like the depth isn't there as much.
And I think we can give it
because
some time.
The guys are aging. We're obviously going to give it time. It's 4 games in, but to
Rocco's point, like, it's not like a third and fourth line consisting of like young guys who we're unsure of and we're hoping you contribute some production here. Like, we're talking about Pajot and Lee, who are another year older, like Cizikas and Wahlstrom, who we know exactly who they are at this point. This is like, this bottom six is not some mystery. And for a lot of teams, like, even if the bottom six is not entirely, I don't know, what word am I trying to use here? Even if the bottom six is not
set in stone.
Like, no, not even set in stone, like contributing to like the offense of the team, like they're getting some help from the back end. Like, Pelech and Pulock are not helping you on the offensive side of the puck. They're barely helping you on the defensive side of the puck.
Let me ask you, this defensive group
is an issue.
What would you guys want to change in the bottom six right now? Like, what exactly would you do?
I mean, it's an incredibly tough question. Like, would I prefer my captain not be a fucking 6'3" fat ass who can't skate? Like, making $7 million playing on the third line. Like, yeah, dude, I wish that that was not the case. Who would I replace him with? It's like a, I don't know. It's a wide open question.
Jack,
but you could develop some youth who could be on that third line.
Jack, like, you watched the whole game. Like, what's the biggest problem in your eyes watching the whole game? Like, because to me, it's painfully obvious. Like, you watch it. What do you think the biggest problem is watching this team?
Tonight, I just think it was the lack of finish.
Well, that's been the same exact problem for the last 4 years with this group. They don't finish. It's so hard for them to manufacture offense. They just don't finish. It's not really going to change. And that's just what frustrates me is that I feel like I'm watching a bad replay of like every Islander game from the last 4 years. It's just
let me tell you this though: the first two lines can score. Don't tell me they can't score.
No, they can
score.
They can.
The third line right now, it was scoring last year with Engvall. He's in the minors. They're holding him accountable. They need to figure out a piece for that third line because we know it's capable of something. Now, however you want to do that, whether it's putting Holmstrom on the fourth, putting Wallstrom in the press box, maybe throwing Gauthier in that role, I don't know. But they do need to figure that out because I think that that's really the missing link of this team. It's that third line. And Holmstrom is a good defensive-minded forward, but he just doesn't have it offensively. I don't know what it is.
I have no idea why he's on the power play.
That's a problem. No. Okay, yeah, you guys got me on this one.
That's a problem.
That's got to
Did you
stop.
Hear
You're
what
better
Butch,
off with literally anyone there.
Did you hear what Butch said about him?
Yeah.
He literally just goes, yeah, Simon Holmstrom's a good skater, but he's kind of just there. And he said that, and I was like, that's actually so accurate. He just kind of skates around.
He
and just kind of exists.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think sometimes Butch was such a good player that like when he's watching these atrocious power plays and players making plays like Holmstrom.
No, dude, he's just not getting any younger, just like me and Rocco, and he's pissed off. He wants to see a good product.
He's like, what
and
am
he's
I
also,
watching? Here?
And he also comes from an era that when if you didn't have the most skill, you brought some physicality to the table. So a guy like Butch probably sees a guy like him and says, why don't you fucking hit somebody?
I agree.
And we know that's not Holmstrom's game, but again, like if you don't have a ton of skill, we've seen guys do it before where they adjust their game. You know, how many guys do you see in a playoff run where they started off as a top prospect and then they're on the team's third, fourth line and you have the guys saying, oh, he, you know, was a high draft pick, highly talented, tons of skill, but he really changed his game to fit on a third, fourth line. Maybe not the best example, but one that comes to mind is a guy like Jimmy Vesey. He came out of school, highly touted, whatever else. Now he's changed his game and he's a pretty solid bottom six type guy. Some of these guys come from these programs or professional teams over in Europe where they're highly skilled and they're one of the best players on their team. And then they come over to the NHL and you're not really going to be that anymore. So it comes down to, can you adjust? Can you play a bottom six role? And some of these guys just aren't built for it. I hope Holmstrom succeeds, but I'm starting to wonder if he's built for it. Wallstrom, I do not think is built for it. We constantly see him. And I get it. He has skill, but how many chances are we going to get him? It reminds me of like the person in public that comes in on speakerphone. You're just fucking loud. It keeps getting worse. And you're just wondering when it's going to end. And it feels like it never fucking ends. Wallstrom is a speakerphone.
It's with Holmstrom. I just get frustrated because we're like, yeah, he's a good defensive forward. Like he might kill penalties sometimes. Like, bro, you were a first round pick and you don't score.
But you have to, you
don't
have to put
hit
that aside
anyone.
Now.
It's just not good enough from him. And he has like 2 points, I think, in the first five games now. And, you know, one of those points was because they were on a penalty kill and Pajot tees him up for a one-timer. The guy whiffs on the shot. Pajot backhands in the rebound. And it's like, wow, he got a Mickey assist. Great. Now he's going to stay in and nobody's going to question Holmstrom before anybody else. I just am starting to lose a little bit of confidence in him because I don't think he's like a defensive specialist by any means. And just the lack of physicality and like lack of decisiveness.
You know, it's
really
a shame that you're giving up on Swedish Bailey so soon.
Oh, please don't even compare those two.
I mean, this does feel like the year he was supposed to break out now. Like he was young and then last year it's whatever he was, you know, it's a long season. He's got to get used to it. And this year I was really hoping he was going to break out and take a role and run with it because he was actually given the opportunity straight out. And he's just, I don't know. He's just a very mediocre player to me.
Agreed. And we need someone new on that third line. That would be my biggest like.
But in-house, where do you would, so you
Gauthier.
Personally would put Gauthier? I mean, Gauthier has some good qualities, but he's another one. He kind of just is what he is, you know?
get him some get some speed in there. Just give it a shot.
Yeah. Good, just good skater. He's big.
Just throw shit at the wall, man. Like, I don't know. Maybe try Foodie. If you're not going to call up Engvall, just call up Foodie.
I think Foodie got hurt the other night. Was it Foodie or someone else? I saw someone got hurt in the A. I think it might have been him.
Can't really tell you that I've been paying attention to Bridgeport.
No, I haven't. I saw a tweet into the season. No.
Shout out to anyone that does watch all these Bridgeport games. You guys are another level. I can't do it all the time. I can't do it barely at all.
No, it's too, especially right now with all the other sports going on. But yeah, it's just frustrating, man. It's like a night like tonight. There were how many pucks just trickled by and just.
I think at least once a period.
There were so many where I'm like, all right, that's going to go in. There was one scramble in front. It was Sipilkov and a couple other guys. I thought they were going to have it. And then somewhat late in the third, it happened again.
Yeah, Dobson actually made a nice play on Kyrou going one-on-one. And he's a premier player. I was happy while Dobson did that. However, Dobson hasn't looked great defensively either the first few games, if that's something you wanted to touch on.
When has he, though?
Exactly. Yeah, you were just hoping it would get better, but it hasn't gotten better.
Exactly.
We're hoping
the entire top pair of the defense is just hope. We hope that Romanov can, you know, lay a few hits and not have Pelech type errors, and we hope that Dobson develops into a good defensive defenseman. Like, it's hope.
Romanov's like the only one that, like, you know what you're gonna get at least. Like, these other three, well, really Pelech and Dobson are just straight wild cards. And somehow Riley and Mayfield are like our best defensive pair so far, I think.
But that's bad. If your bottom pair is your best pair, it's not a good sign.
As Ethan said on Twitter the other night over Phil, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
It's not.
As we continue in our misery here, recapping the Islander game, what do you think is your, or who is really your guys' biggest concern? It can be an overall like thing you're noticing with the team, or it could be an individual player, but whoever wants to go first, feel free.
Jack, reverse order, age-wise.
There you go.
For me, I was going to say maybe one player, but I'll go with the third line as a whole. Lee, Pageau, and Holmstrom. At this point, I think Lee has actually been the best player on this line, and I'm not gonna jab at Lee right now because we did that a lot over the last few years. And at this point, like, he's just a good third line player. Yeah, he's overpaid, but he's our captain and it's just going to be like that. So we may as well accept it. Pageau, I just don't think has looked so good. And that worries me a little bit. The Islanders like need him to be a really good defensive forward and chip in 35 to 40 points. And I don't know, at times already this season, he just looks off to me. And Holmstrom, on the other hand, we just dove into him a little bit. We really got to get him off the power play. I know it's our second unit, but I think literally anybody else would be better in that role. Just like how Cizikas was better than him playing with Barzal and Horvat at the end of last season. Just anybody else on the power play. Holmstrom, I just want to see him look less scared out there. He just doesn't have any confidence going into battles and trying to take away the puck. He's just so passive on everything. I just want to see him shoot and like get active more. But yeah, that's my main concern. The third line.
My concern would be the Pulock-Pelech pairing. Again, just Pelech has not been the same since the concussion, both guys with big injury histories. You don't expect them really to contribute on the offensive side of the puck. And I think that's a huge issue. Two guys who combine for a total of $12 million against the salary cap, who each have a modified no trade clause coming up in July. And, you know, you were to ask me right now, I'd say cut both of them loose and do it in the most polite way possible. Be like, guys, give me your list. You're gone. They got to get younger and more offensively talented on the back end.
Yeah, I mean, I think you both hit the nail on the head. Those were kind of both my thinking. I'm just worried as a whole in regards to what both of you said, the cap structure as well. Because you think of a guy like Pageau, what Ethan said with Pelech and Pulock, these guys, they're all long-term deals. They all have a lot of money on the books. And if these guys don't improve, you know, you get stuck in a place where you can't move them. And then we're stuck in a place where it's the same cast or mostly the same cast over and over again. So I would just like the depth of this team to start playing a bit better. I know we said Riley and Mayfield look good, which they do, but you know, the middle pair of the defense, the third and fourth line on the offense, we need them to get going because you can't depend. There's going to be nights where the first line kind of can't buy one. There's going to be nights where you're playing a really sound defensive team and you need, you know, a greasy goal for a guy to just chip in late in the third. So these guys need to step up, and I hope it comes soon because, you know, as we saw last year, once you dig yourself in a hole, the harder it is to make the playoffs come the end of the year. And this team constantly says, we don't want to make it the last minute. We don't want to make it the last game. We don't want to make it the last two games. Well, as usual, they're looking like the type of team that will probably, if they make it toward the end of the year.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jack, that comment seems to have upset you from Rocco. So why don't you go ahead?
No, I was going to actually say one more thing that I'm concerned about.
Go ahead.
No, I didn't. And I probably looked angry because it's really pissing me off. Like, this is just unfiltered. Can we win a fucking overtime game or not to overtime? I'm just so sick of losing these games in OT or a shootout. Patrick Waugh, please, if you're listening, work on this. We can't deal with it anymore.
Loyal listener, Patrick Waugh, yeah. All right, let me ask you as a question. Are you extending Dobson?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, what do you do? What do you do?
What would you
do?
What would you do? You want to get rid of Pelican Pullock, then you're not going to extend Dobson? Who you can have on D? For who? I mean, the thing is with – it's not a shot at you, just in general. Like, when people say, oh, I would just trade him, like – It's
Don't. We're not doing this shit right now because I know exactly what you're gonna say. The laziest.
You don't know
pro
what's out
Dobson,
there.
No. The laziest.
That's what
pro
I was gonna
Dobson,
say.
No. The laziest pro Dobson argument is, 70-point defensemen don't grow on trees. All right, I don't give a fuck if he's letting up 80. Like, if someone is going to fall for that allure and be like, yeah, I'd give a 24-year-old 70-point defenseman, you know, $9 million a year, God bless him. Let him go be someone else's problem. There are far better ways to use that money on this team than on that. I'm sorry.
I actually agree with Ethan here. I would trade him. And it's because it's like we get to a playoff series and this guy can't even run the top power play unit. And hate to say it, probably will get ripped on for it, but Dobson's 70-point season was under a head coach that didn't give a shit about defense. And this guy was just
He's a Barzal assist merchant.
I don't know. Yes, he makes some crazy passes sometimes, and it's nice to see, but
he's not a puck mover. He's not a sniper.
He's not great at running the power play, which you need your number one defenseman of nine.
He's not good on his own end. So he's a slightly above average offensive compiler. Like that's what he is.
But what do you do? Like
trade him. Go get some picks, young players. Maybe you execute a sign and trade. I don't fucking know. Like committing 8 years to this dude.
I'm more of like a Slavin defenseman type than an Erik Karlsson defenseman type.
You need both. You need within your entire D. You do need both. You need offensive guys, defensive guys. Maybe
and we have Riley. We have Mike Riley.
Jack, you can't do a long term out.
That's
and
crazy.
Say Mike Riley. Yeah. We got him on waivers for God's sake.
Temporarily, he could run the top power play unit.
No, he could not.
He did it last year.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
But we're talking about but the Dobson argument, you have to consider long term outlook.
This is not a fix for this season. This is like a gap year thing.
No,
again, like you guys are asking like, where's the replacement? Okay, that's fine. It's a valid question. I don't have the answer for you right now. But if you're getting rid of Pelican, you're getting rid of Pullock, you're freeing up $12 million. Plus the opportunity cost of not giving Dobson $8 million a year. What is he making now? Four. So you're freeing up what? Is he making four? How much is he making right now?
Around four. Dobson. Or five. Yeah, he's in the gap bridge.
We're not trading. I'm not for trading Pelican Pollock, but Dobson. $9 million.
Four. Okay, so you're freeing up $16 million to fill three spots.
It's already the damage is already done with Pelican Pollock. You just got to hope they play well. Dobson, the damage isn't done.
I'm talking about the future already. I understand
I'm totally for moving Dobson if you're going to be like, let's tear it down and start over. Then I'm on board.
What? Look at your first line and your goaltending. You move a guy who can't defend and you're saying tear it down. You're delusional. You're delusional.
Well, if you're getting rid of Pelech, Pollock, and Dobson, you need to get half a new defensive core. That's essentially tearing it down. You're essentially tearing that down.
Yeah, fix it in one season.
I think if you do a Dobson sort of trade, you're actually looking to do a Kachuk type trade where you trade quality players for a higher quality player. If you were to do that sort of thing,
you know what?
Like, If a Marner becomes available, we can't get too far into a Dobson trade scenario.
It's October 17th. We just lost our fifth game of the season. We're not trading Noah Dobson. We're losing our freaking minds here.
Yeah.
Let's move
Jack's
on.
Jack's the reasonable one.
Should we do questions?
Yeah, whatever.
We got them lined up, Greeny?
Yeah, I got a couple of them lined up. So if you've gotten to this point, thank you. And we're going to take some of your questions if I can get them up. This is first one from Phil Jewell 81. Thoughts on Barzell getting more time 5-on-6? Last couple years, we always saw Lee and Pageau as the defensive line, but I'm all for Barzell getting more looks there using his speed to create turnovers. He was fantastic at his own end backchecking against Colorado. Which
absolutely.
Agree 100%. We need more speed.
5-on-6, 6-on-5. Barzell should be out there.
Like, he should be killing penalties too. I've been arguing for that for 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. He's your most skilled skater, and on top of that, I think he led the team in takeaways last year. So yeah. I don't know why he wouldn't be out there.
One of the top in the NHL, I believe.
Yes, that is true. I think he was like top five.
Actually, our guy Steph had a really good stat. I think that currently through the first like 2 weeks of the season, Barzell leads the NHL in clean zone exits. I think whatever he calls it, like carrying the puck out himself, he leads the league in that.
He was third in the NHL in takeaways last season. I'm totally for this, by the way. It just makes him a more complete player and there's nothing to lose.
And he has looked, I think it's early, but one positive sign is I think he's looked even better defensively so far. That Colorado game, he was coming back so much. He was intercepting passes. He looked really good. I think Wah really has him playing at both ends. So that to me is one huge positive. Barzy going up and down. I feel like Barry Trotz is that like guy from Rudy watching from the locker room clapping in Nashville.
100%.
Yeah, he's way less responsibility on the wing too. I think that's freed him up.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it lets him use his speed too. You know what I mean? He could go for that takeaway and fly down the other end.
For sure. All right, so our next question is from Cheech and Chico. So what do you guys think of the final season split between Varley and Sorokin? Sorokin looked good in Colorado. We kind of touched on this before, but what do you think the split between the two goalies is going to look like come April?
65-35. Sorokin.
That wouldn't be good for Jack's Vezina ticket.
No, it wouldn't. But my plus 20,000. What are you going to do?
My Vezina ticket is dead. I apologize to anyone who drove out to Jersey. I'll go 49-32. If anything, I would expect Sorokin.
He's doing
to
games
start.
Played, guys.
Yeah. Oh, wait. What was I supposed to do?
Percentages.
Percentage.
Yeah. There's also 82 games in a season.
Yeah, not 81.
Maybe he thought Hoberg was going to get one somewhere along the
way. Or Skarik is going to get a spot start.
I just want to understand where his brain went when I went 65-35 to lead him to say 49-32.
Right, it's late. 60-40.
Okay, cool. Rocco.
I might have to play Prices Right and go like right in between you guys.
Rocco's going to give us like the Pythagorean theorem or something.
I agree with Ethan. Probably like 65-35. Maybe honestly leaning a little higher. Heavier Sorokin if it's really down to the wire and you need to win games. You might put him in a couple extra 5-6 in a row down the stretch if it's needed. So I'd go 65-70% leaning Sorokin.
All right. I like that. I'm probably on the same page. I think Sorokin gets the majority of the starts, but see how it plays out. Next question is from probably our official podcast mascot, Dino Dangle, a.k.a. Mike, who wants to know if we had to pick only three of our UFA/RFAs going into next year to keep and not trade, who would it be? He gave a list of Dobson, Nelson, Palmieri, Siplikov, and Romanov.
Oh, wow. So I have to pick three of those to keep.
Three of those to keep.
That's very hard.
I love this question.
I don't think it's that hard. Okay. All right, Siplikov.
Four games in, he's keeping Siplikov. I like it.
Romanov, probably very cost effective. Keeping him. And then who are the other four?
It was Dobson, Nelson, and Palmieri are your other three.
Fuck, man.
You could say neither. You could just say those two.
Oh, I thought I had to pick three.
No, I mean, that was the question, but I'm kind of changing it. You can only pick two if you hate everyone
no,
else.
No, no, no. I'm going to respect Mike's question. I'm going to go Palmieri because I feel like at age 35, he's going to get a real, like, you know, like a 1 year, $3 million or something like that for like a 2 year.
Way too many agendas to take Nelson or Dobson.
Exactly. I do. Exactly. I'm glad you respect the agenda.
Jack, that you want to answer?
Great. Yeah. I'll go Romanov, Siplikov, and Dobson. Oof.
So you're keeping Dobson, huh?
No.
Keeping the youth.
No explanation.
You could have gone Romanov to keep the youth.
Dobson, I mean, Dobson's young. Nelson and Palmieri, I feel like their best days are behind them.
Yeah, but here's the thing. All right, Rocco, before you go, there is like there's context behind this question that Mike left unsaid. You have to take into account what these contracts are going to be. Like, if the team is extending Nelson, it's probably with like not a lot of term, but like 3 to 4 years.
He's going to be kept for a lot of term.
So, okay, Nelson, like 3, 4, 5 years. Like, if you're picking Dobson in this scenario, you're giving him at least $8 million a year for 8 years. If you're picking, you know, like if you're picking Romanov, like, all right, you're probably going to do like $4.5, $5 million for some term. Palmieri at age, going into his age 35 season, what is he going to get? 1, 2 years? So, like, that's how I view the question.
I look at it as what gives the Islanders the highest ceiling for the next several years. That's why I picked those three players. I don't think Nelson and Palmieri do that.
I mean, I agree they don't, but I think it value whatever.
So I'm going to answer it as if, you know, what we discussed before in regards to the gap year. So if they're still at the same point come playoff time and they're a first round exit, whatever else, or they're aiming to be that, let's say. If I would probably say Dobbs, I would probably say the same as Jack. And with the theory of if you decide to do that, you move the other two at the deadline, get the best assets, and then you have a lot to work with come the offseason. But realistically, I don't think they're going to end up losing that many guys. But if you can only pick 3 of 5, that's how I would probably go about it, is move Nelson and Palmieri, mostly due to age. And I understand Ethan's theory with the future contracts and whatnot, but I think you could get value if you had to move those guys. It's a very tough question because, you know, some are RFA, some are UFAs to be, but I think I'm letting Palms and Brock go due to age.
That was a good question though. And I agree.
It's a hard, it's a hard answer. Question.
Yeah. No, I definitely do. All right. So there's a couple more that I think are pretty good. So we didn't really talk about the special teams a lot. So this one is from EJK612. How are we feeling about the overall state of the special teams units going into the season? And I'll add to that, in addition to just 5-on-4, 4 versus 5, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, all that other shit.
Haven't seen enough of the power play, but what I have seen hasn't been the most encouraging. I would say it's probably the most concerning so far. The PK, I think, is in the middle of just getting better. I wish that they took a little bit more of an aggressive approach when it came to puck retrieval or pressuring the point men. But yeah, that Utah game was a disaster. I mean, these guys were wide open making cross-ice passes. That just can't happen. So I think special teams as a whole hasn't been good so far. We had 2 power plays tonight. St. Louis had 1. We just needed to convert 1 and we win the game, and we don't do that. We need to play 3-on-3. We don't do that. At 4-on-4, we had a bad turnover. St. Louis nearly scored. We just need to be better in those situations. So overall, I'm unsatisfied with it so far. All of them.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'm not totally satisfied. That's one question where I will say, I think the early excuse is valid because of the new coaching staff, first training camp, whatnot. But I do completely agree with Jack with the PK. I think they should be more aggressive. I think most teams that are successful show that. But yeah, I'm not too satisfied with anything, but I think the jury's still out.
I'm just going to coattail on Jack's answer. That was a great answer.
There you go. Well, this was actually my complaint before, but Jack kind of touched on it because they're so bad in overtime. I just want them to have a good special teams once, and they just never seem to figure it out.
Their Achilles heel every year, it seems like.
It's every single year. And when a team that struggles to score, they could really use a power play that can kind of help them. But We'll see if that changes. All right. Were you guys down for two more questions?
That's fine.
Perfect. All right. So we've been very negative. So this question is kind of a little bit of both. Who do you guys think has been A, the best player so far, and who has been the worst player? We kind of talked about worst, but who's been the best player so far?
Sorokin.
Jack?
So I think you guys are right on Sorokin. I don't really think that's much of an argument, but I've been really impressed with Scott Mayfield so far. I think he's been the best relative to expectation. He really had a rough season last year, and everything I've seen so far, aside from a few boneheaded plays, he looks really good out there. So I'm happy for Scotty.
Question for you guys quickly, because Greeny and I are more the team Sorokin lovers. And I think you, Ethan and Jack are a bit harder. What would it take? Like, at what point this season would he have to get to for you guys to be like, all right, like, the guy's back, I'm not as worried. Like, where are you at in regards to that?
Keep doing this.
But for how long? Like, would he have to get to like midseason? Would it? I know Jack's very emotional season. In regards to this. He messed up the playoffs. He owes me this. He owes me that. So I'm very curious.
I'm going to go in. There's nothing he can do this regular season, or unless he wins the Vezina Trophy, because Sorokin is paid $8-something million a year. Now a bunch of these goaltenders are, but Sorokin's here to be the reason. He hasn't been the reason yet. He hasn't won a Vezina Trophy yet. And honestly, if he wins that, then okay, yeah, you guys got me. But it's either that or it's either that playoff series where we need our goalie to shine, and this man carries us through a 7-game grind and wins us the series. That's what it'll take for me, because that's what he's paid to do, and those are my expectations.
Jack's asking for the world over here.
Yeah, but Jack's asking for Sorokin to be, you know, Stanley's going to be above his head.
I think that those playoff performances are also team related too. I don't think it's completely fair to just say, oh, he's got to win us the series.
Ilya Sorokin's got to steal Lord Stanley's soul himself for Jack to be satisfied.
Just win us the playoff series, bro. That's all
right. Last question. Yeah,
all he's got to do. Also, quickly, I just want to give love to KG Lee. Max Siplikov, I've been very impressed so far. I think he's actually been a very pleasant surprise. So
me too. And I also want to give a shout out to those who understood the nickname.
There you go. Yeah, there were some positive Twitter comments on that. So it's
that's good. Yeah. It's good, because I heard that there were some people who didn't understand it. So I just wanted to shout out those who did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They'll catch on. All right. Let's round it out with just kind of a general outlook question. This is from JJohns196. He says, things can always change, i.e. the Mets. But at this point, what do you guys consider to be a successful season?
Making the playoffs.
Winning around in the playoffs.
You took the words out of my mouth, Jack. Winning around. Improve, like, better than what they've been the last 2 years. If you're in the same spot, I think it's bad. So I think winning around and stepping in the right direction where you could win around and you could go into the offseason saying, hey, you know, if they make a move or two, you could continue. If they just go to the first round and lose, I think the season's a disappointment.
But would your mind change if, like, let's say they won like the first round in like a 6-game series against a banged up team, and then they played like a Florida or a Tampa in the second round and got absolutely worked? Would you feel better that they just got there?
Oh, so you're saying if they just had a favorable matchup and happened to win?
Correct.
Yeah, I get that, but I don't know. I need to see. I know it might not be fair because they haven't always gotten the best matchup. Carolina's obviously been their kryptonite, but I'm going to stick to what I said. I think they need to win around it. They need to improve on what they've been doing, because it's been 2 years in a row, first round exits. No matter what the matchup, to me, they have to win a round.
They just have to win a round for me. And you never know how that might look. Like, who knows where they're going to be at the trade deadline? Like, there's so much in between. We'll see where we go from here.
All right, Ethan, wrap it up.
Okay. Follow us on Twitter at Isles House. Subscribe. We're everywhere. And we'll be back next week.
I think so.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
See you guys. Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around. Ayo's house in the middle.